We begin the hour like we do each Tuesday afternoon by getting on the telephone and welcoming in our friend, writer, and critic, Colin Fleming. Hello, Colin.
Happy birthday, Mr. Kimball.
Thank you very much. It's good to have survived for another year.
Yes, you keep right on a ticking.
Yes. Who knows? At this point, I've reached that age where now, look, it's crapshoot. People my age dropping all the time. So if I even make it through this segment, I will consider it a victory of sorts.
Oh, wow. That's kind of a lot of pressure not to fail you. But, yeah, I think we'll probably be okay.
It won't be you. It'll be the heat, which brings us to you and your workout, your training regimen. First of all, how much are you doing on a steamy, hot day like this?
They shut me down today. Well,
good.
Not me down. They shut everyone down, right. I don't mind the heat when I'm working out, or in this case, climbing the Bunker Hill Monument multiple times. But apparently the park rangers do not want to have to extricate someone from inside. It's kind of a vault of death if something happens to you within the obelisk that is the Bunker Hill Monument, which is what I go up and down. And so sometimes you'll see, like, the ambulance outside. And if you're an ambulance person, you can't be really enjoying getting the stretcher up there. So when the heat index is over 87%, and I had never even heard of heat index until the other day, they shut it down. People get sick in there. They pass out. And when someone does vomit in the monument, it's like done for the day. It's not just like, okay, step over it, keep going. We're all tough here. We're all Zulu warriors. No, it's not that. They shut it down, and I become crestfallen when I get over there, and I can't do my thing.
Now, Bruce was saying earlier, is this right? 259 steps?
294.
294, okay.
So they recommend that you take about 15 minutes to go to the top and come back down. But let's face it, if that's what you're doing, you're lollygagging, and we don't really respect that. So what I do most mornings is I run 3 miles, and then I go to this cafe at the end of my street where they hate to see me because I come in and I'm absolutely dripping, and they see me outside on the street, and they get the coffee poured before I come in. I get a hot coffee because once I was watching Gunsmoke, and Matt Dillon, he was drinking this hot coffee. And Festus is like, what are you doing here, dude? And Dillon's like, well, it equalizes with the heat on the outside. And I thought, well, it's Matt Dillon, so I'm going to have the hot coffee on the hot day. I get that. I get a water. I go back to the monument, mile and a half walk, and I start doing stairs. And I should be able to go up and down 5 times in about 30 minutes. And inevitably, even if you are someone I pass 5-6 times in there, you will not remember me, and you will give me a tip each time I go past to pace myself that I couldn't possibly make it to the top. And then there are the people who joke, and you hear them do the same joke with everyone they pass on the way down. Oh, there's a bar for you waiting upstairs. It's like, come on, dude. You've done this joke like 15 times just during my climbs today. People love their jokes.
You've also, because of your time there, you've done some research, you've learned a lot about the Bunker Hill Monument, 175 years old. Tell us a little bit about the history of it.
It was erected in, well, it was completed in 1843, and there's a statue outside for Colonel William Prescott. And we're not actually on Bunker Hill. We're on Breed's Hill,
right.
Basically,
right.
Doesn't exist anymore. Right. And Prescott really should not have a statue for him, because he was the reason so many Americans got slaughtered that day. He was a horrible tactician. He's kind of remembered now for his "don't fire until you see the whites of their eyes" line. And if you go through the history, though, it's like this guy did not know what he was doing. Joseph Warren died there. Joseph Warren was someone who would have been a kind of like Ben Franklin, Samuel Adams type, maybe even more so than Samuel Adams, like a leader of this burgeoning country. But he had this kind of like hero fulfillment wish going on, and he shows up at the battle, and he's not any kind of fighter whatsoever, but he just wanted to be there, knowing, like, pretty certainly that he'd die, which is a really strange kind of sacrifice to make when it wasn't really essential to the cause. And the granite is from Rockport, which is where I had a house. I'm trying to get it back. The reason I do this in the monument is because about 6+ years ago, I had a house in Rockport, and I had a wife who I didn't know at the time was cheating on me for quite a while. And she just left, just absconded. There wasn't a word of warning, anything like that. I was set upon by lawyers, and my life fell apart. I never heard from her again. lost a house, and I was on assignment for ESPN in 2012. I was out in San Francisco to meet with Buster Posey of the Giants, and I had a stroke while I was there. A few hours later, I got on the plane because I didn't really wish to live at that point. And a bunch of other things happened over the years. My sister died. I had a broken engagement. All these things. Just really difficult with publishing, basically trying to run me into the ground. The more I worked hard, the more I achieved, the worse things got. And so to keep myself going, I started doing this monument thing. And it sort of just became something I took for granted. But people thought it was like super odd because no one really uses a historic monument on the National Register as their personal gym. And I thought I'd see other people doing it too. I'm poor, and so it's like free. And yet, it's just me, up and down, every day.
But there's more to it, obviously, than the physical exercise, that there's some soul work going on here as well.
Yes, exactly. And I didn't know when I started doing it, it was only in the past few months, that the granite itself is actually from this place, Rockport, that I love more than any other place on earth that I'm trying to get back to. And I just thought, wow, that's just a really kind of eerie symbolism that it was carried here from 30 miles to the north, and you are going up and down. And when I'm in there, it's a combination of things. I write in my head while I'm going up and down, mm-hmm. so I can, within those 30, 35 minutes, I can leave with two ideas, a nonfiction piece written, and a whole new short story in my head. And then I just keep working on it in my head as I walk back. And eventually, at some point, I just wave my fingers over the keyboard and I type it out. But that's what I'm doing. I'm keeping myself going. And I'm also trying to outlast. I mean, I work 20 hours a day. And the more I achieve, the harder things get in my business because they just double down. Publishing is all cronyism. It's all kind of, you know, you stroke me, I stroke you. And they don't want someone who's going to be the expert on this, publishing five times a week and being on the radio or whatever. And you wouldn't think it works like that, but it does. So the harder I work, the more I achieve, the worse things got. So I realized I had to outlast my enemies in some sense. And for me, part of that is being physically fit. You think of writing as you can just be some corpulent monster at the keyboard, but not for me. I have to be in this kind of attack, sort of intellectual, mental, Zulu warrior type of mode that goes beyond the physical and allows me to do my art.
And you've got a lot of things cooking, too, including some very exciting writing. We've talked with you about the Beatles before. Can you talk a little bit about what will be available soon?
Sure. There are a bunch of things either just out or coming out. Let's see, yesterday there was a piece in Rolling Stone on a session the Beatles gave for the BBC on July 2nd, 1963, so 55 years ago. And it was basically the session where they turned up and they decided to take on their heroes. What happened at the BBC normally is people would have requests for the Beatles, they'd call them in, schoolgirls and whatnot, and they were kind of human jukebox and they would play Johnny B. Goode or Lonesome Tears in My Eyes, or some Carl Perkins number. And that day at the BBC, they played a Chuck Berry number, an Elvis number, one of their own compositions, a Perkins number, a song by a group called the Jodhamars, and an Arthur Alexander number, which is one of their greatest ever performances. And then today, I wrote something for Salon, also on the Beatles, looking at the kind of restorative melancholia of Yellow Submarine, which the Beatles had nothing to do with. And I just kind of like how it owns its sort of somberness, its sadness. It's kind of liberating that way. There'll be a piece any day now in the Wall Street Journal. It's my first op-ed for them, which is on why we're so fragmented, that we have this performative nature to appear happy and to make our lives appear better than they are. And when we dispense with that, it's actually freeing and it allows us to connect more with other people. There'll be a piece in the Barnes & Noble Review on 2001, A Space Odyssey, and there's always just a lot. I wrote something yesterday on Coltrane, which I think the American Interest will publish, and yeah, always a lot.
As always, Colin Fleming with us. Well, we would be remiss, too, in talking about the monument, to not talk about an episode of one of my favorite shows as a kid, even though I didn't understand it at the time, being so young, but The Adventures of Todd and Buzz, a Route 66 episode that began at the Bunker Hill Monument.
Oh, sure, yeah. It's on YouTube, too. You can actually check that out. It was the one they did in Boston because, as we all know, Route 66 crosses right through, like, Brookline and on into Chestnut Hill.
Yeah, sure.
They could have done, like, an international edition, but there is an episode where it starts with them coming, and it looks exactly like it looks now, so I guess no one gets more excited by this episode than I do, where they're coming down the stairs. And I sometimes wonder when I watch, like, did they actually go up to the top, or are they faking that? And they come out, and they see someone actually vandalizing the Prescott statue. Like, there he is again. And, of course, they don't like this. And, actually, it's funny. There was an urban legend, well, just for me, that I had heard a park ranger say that the Dano Chara of the Bruins had gone from the bottom of the monument to the top in 90 seconds.
Wow.
So when I heard this, I thought, right, I'm going for Chara's record. I'm totally going to train for Chara's record. So a few months later, I'm out on Atlantic Ave. Who do I run into? But Zdeno Chara. So I go up to Chara, and I say, did you really go from the bottom of the monument to the top in 90 seconds? He looks at me and says, I'm Chara. Hockey. I'm like, no, I know. You do the monument. He clearly thought I was insane and had no idea what I was talking about. And I think, Kimball, I think I am basically the Chara of the monument.
Well, there's no question about it. Absolutely. Well, we wish you well in the oppressive heat of the next couple of days. You'd be safe in those workouts.
Okay. Happy 4th and happy birthday.
Thank you. Yeah, I will be, and you'll appreciate this. You know what I'm most excited about beyond my birthday is that the Decades Network is airing a Twilight Zone marathon over the next couple of days.
Because sci-fi isn't.
I know, and I'm mad at them for that.
Well, they always chopped out, like, minutes of the episode, but that's a big thing. That's really, probably for you, too, as for me, the only reason that I watch sci-fi twice a year.
Right.
New Year's Day, and it's July 4th, and I think it allows people who are Twilight Zone fans to sort of have that communal experience of we're all watching at the same time. So sci-fi says, nope, not going to do it. And I looked up that station you just said. I looked it up on my Comcast so I could follow along because I'd never heard of it.
Yeah, I like it a lot. We get it up here. I'll be watching, and which is crazy because I have the box set of all the episodes, but it's that communal thing. It's the idea of watching it, knowing that others are doing the same thing. So I'll be there watching Rod and the gang this weekend or this midweek holiday. Colin, enjoy. We'll check in with you again next week.
All right, sounds good.
All right, thanks, Colin. Colin Fleming here on Downtown.